I'm Scott Ironman College. First of all, I just want to thank Michael for calling me into coming down here. He asked very nicely, and my response to anything asked of me in Alcoholics Anonymous is absolutely, is there anything else I could do? Not because that's who I truly am, but because that's who I became as a result of the process of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I also want to throw it out there that I'm not an authority on any of this stuff. I belong in the chairs right now. I'm not, this isn't something that I do often. I'm definitely not like the guru book study kind of guy. But I feel honored by the opportunity to be able to do this. This is not my style. My style is to come here in baggy pants, shaved head, baggy shirt, cussing and doing all that kind of stuff. And that's just where I come from. So the fact that I'm able to, was asked to do this, which is the complete opposite, is just a blessing. It's one more opportunity for me to grow up and become the man that I want to be someday. So with that, I'm going to just let you guys know a little bit about myself. And then I didn't come up with a study plan. I didn't like take notes. I didn't research. I didn't do any of that stuff. But I definitely prepared myself for tonight. And what I did is that when I got here, I went to the bathroom and I said, God, you're going to have to do this because I sure that I can't. And that's my preparation, and we're going to see what happens from there. So, yeah. If you guys don't like the outcome, you have to take it up with him. I do want to start by just taking another just kind of more aside, if you guys don't mind, so that I could just kind of ask for a little bit more help, and then we'll get this started. Thank you. Thank you. I do that because it was taught to me. I mean, I do that because I was taught that, that I could invite God to come and to kind of guide me through this and help me out with this process. And that's what I choose to do because it works so well in my life. Here's the deal. I come from a single mother household. My mom worked her butt off. She went to school full time, went to work full time. She was a soccer mom, the football mom, the Girl Scout leader, the Boy Scout leader. She was everything. I never felt lack of love. I was never locked in closets and beaten and whipped and any of that stuff. And if there's anybody who had that experience, man, my heart goes out to you. We were a little on the poor side. We didn't have a ton of money, single mother, raising us. But other than that, I never felt the lack of love. I can't look back at my childhood and say, you know what, that's why I'm an alcoholic. I can't pick that one thing that I can blame it on. I can't find that even one thing about my childhood that I'm really disappointed in or bummed out about. I think my mom did a bitchin' job. And she was the most selfless. I was taught these morals and I was taught Alcoholics Anonymous through a non-alcoholic woman my whole life. I mean, she taught me, just morals and all that stuff. There's something missing though. There's something missing from being taught this stuff and knowing the morals and being that kind of guy to Tyler actually being able to apply it in his life. There's some kind of missing little link there. I had the brand new Nike Airs and the nice outfits and looked real cool and I'm one of the popular cool kids, right? And my mom's walking around with like broken pumps. And she's like hobbling, to like get to work, and like she's just run down and beat up, but she taught us that selflessness, and she would give without strings attached, and she was just that kind of mom. Thanksgiving wore down, and I didn't understand it, but Thanksgiving wore down like doing the pumpkin pies to the homeless shelters. I mean, that's how we spent our holidays together growing up. I mean, we'd open our presents, and then my mom would say, "Okay, now it's time to go give and to be grateful." And I was taught all that stuff. Is that who I was when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous? Absolutely not. I also like to let you guys know that when I was in fifth grade, I remember my teacher saying, "What are you going to be when you grow up?" And I didn't say, "Hey, I want to be a hope to die alcoholic and end up, speaking at something at the Paramount Club or, like end up in and out of jails and institutions." I didn't say that. What I said is that I'm going to be a big-time businessman. I'm going to be a marine biologist. I had goals and hopes and dreams. I was going to live in Mission Viejo. I have the Mercedes in the driveway. I was going to have the white picket fence. By the time I'm 25, I'm married with kids, right? And I had it all planned out, and I had a lot of potential, and that's who I was going to be. Why am I here? Right? Every choice, every decision that I was confronted with my whole life, I picked the one that was going to get me closer to where I needed to be. right? Something that felt most comfortable, something that helped me come up is what I used to call it. So I didn't necessarily just wake up one day and go, you know what, I'm really going to F off my life today. How can I really F everything up? I picked choices that I thought were going to amount me to this guy, the guy with the goals and the hopes and dreams. And instead, I end up in a point in my life where I absolutely needed Alcoholics Anonymous. So what I found is that I'm an alcoholic, you know, and right now I'm kind of speaking to the only people I know how to talk to, and that's to the new guy. You know, it's like I found out that I'm an alcoholic, and what happens is me being an alcoholic is I put that juice in my system, and it becomes more important to anything else in my life. That feeling that I get, it hits me in my soul, it hits me to the core like nothing else can do. And I will do anything, I will sacrifice anything for that opportunity to feel that feeling one more time. Right? And it was my best friend, and it worked really well for a long, long period of time. Well, it was long to me. Other people, I remember coming to AA, and I had, you know, people say, well, I've spilled more beer than you drank, and I get that. But for me, it was long enough, you know, and you know, I know that it's more important than that college degree. It's more important than, you know, the tears running down mom's face. More important than the girlfriends who just would do anything, bend over backwards to keep, kind of carry me through life. More important than the friends that I grew up with that would die for me. More important than anything is me getting that feeling or whatever it is that alcohol does to me, getting that, right? Like I said, it hits me like nothing else would. And why would I willingly want to give up that one thing in my life that hits me to my core like that? There's nothing. Women, money, jobs, nothing hits me like that. Why would I willingly want to give it up? And so I fought as long as I could to hold on to that. You know, I did the whole thing where, you know, these substances are hurting me, and but booze is normal, and, you know, I just want to be able to mow the lawn and, like, drink the 40 and, like, watch, you know, like, TV, and, like, I wanted to be able to, and so I fought to kind of protect that for as long as I could. Obviously, I didn't end up in Alcoholics Anonymous because I won that fight. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know if I really have to go too much into the way I drank. I just know that I ended up stuck in the house for 8 months period of time. I was 40 grand in debt on my credit report. Because I'm a good con kind of guy, I could get credit, but I didn't pay it back. I owed my landlord 3 months in rent. I had a not so nice person coming over to my house every day, putting a gun to my head, talking about how much money I owed him. I had two dogs. I had a Doberman Pinscher and a German Shepherd, and I could only afford to get them food. And I'm sitting, and I'm in this house, and there's no furniture, and I'm sitting on the ground next to a futon that my dogs are sleeping on because they deserved it more than I did. And that's how I felt when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. So when I got here, you know, there's something that happens inside me. I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know all this stuff that's going on back here, and I need some help. I absolutely need help, and I should recognize that. And the problem is I come in here, and I want help, but not in the form that you guys give it. You know what I'm saying? I want help that's very obvious to me. I don't want this little, you know, neatly wrapped little present that's disguised. I don't want that. I want obvious help. I mean, money, a hot girlfriend that might be sober and got it all together, a good job. I'm the kind of guy who I'm announcing at every meeting, hey, I'm looking for work. Is there anything open? I'm that guy. And that's the help I needed from you guys. Part of my story is that I've been 5150 twice. I've been 5250 for trying to hurt myself while I was 5150. I would diagnose myself. I would go into the counselors and I would tell them symptoms. The psychiatrist tell them symptoms so that I could get the medication that I needed. My mom's a psychologist. I had her book, and I would say, okay, maybe I'm antidepressive. I'd go in there and tell them all the symptoms, so they prescribe me lithium. And then I leave, and I take my lithium, and it's not working, and, you know, then I'll go, okay, well, maybe I'm this. And I get back and forth. All the while, it's not that I really thought I was this. I wanted to protect my right to drink. And I saw deep down in my gut that if I could find that one pill, that one thing that was going to make me not so crazy, that I would be able to drink like normal people. and that there was maybe something upstairs that was maybe, you know, a chemical imbalance is what I was told. And so I did that. I had been diagnosed manic depressive, bipolar, psychothymic, schizophrenic, clinically depressed, so on, you know, a lot of diagnoses. I've been on Depakote, Wellbutrin, Neurontin, Zoloft, lithium, Seroquel, Prozac, like, it goes on and on and on. And to this day, I mean, I never found anything that made me okay to where I could drink like a normal person. But I tried. And so every time I get sober, it's a medical detox. It's somewhere where I can, you know, they'll help me detox and they'll help me get counseling and psychiatrists. And ultimately, I need that right concoction so that I could be able to stay sober. I was self-medicating. It's another thing that I picked up in the rehabs. And so I've done a lot of those programs, right? You know, I one time something was working. I got 90 days at a Kaiser Permanente dual diagnosis program, intensive outpatient program, and I at 90 days sober, me on a sober mind, I decided to drink and use again. I make that decision, knowing what happens to Tyler, knowing where I come from, knowing what I do to people, knowing that I'm going to see those tears in my mom's face that I can't see, knowing all that. Sober, I drink again. And so, long story short, I ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous this time, January 13, 2003. And actually, January 1st was my New Year's resolution to get sober. My sobriety age, January 13th. And, and I'm doing everything I possibly can do. Like, I can do this, and this, and I'll be able to get sober, right? I have the insurance lined up. Mommy's paying for insurance. I'm scheduled to go into that rehab program the next day. I got the psychiatrist. I got it all lined up, and I'm cutting myself off at 11:58. No more drinking after 11:58, right? Except I wake up the next morning, and I feel like somebody's holding my head underwater. That feeling. And that's what I get when I'm craving it, man, is that somebody's holding my head underwater, and I won't get any relief until I can get some booze. So anyways, January 13, 2003, series of events, I'm back in that rehab, and they're suggesting AA. It's funny how every single treatment center I've ever been to, the aftercare is AA. Here, go to AA. Come pay your money to do the insurance here, but go to AA. And but what I heard was go to AA. I didn't hear work a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never heard that AA was not this. You get what I'm saying? I thought this was AA right here, right now, what we're doing, hanging out, fellowshipping, having coffee, going to meetings, and I absolutely thought this was Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened is that I came here, I tried Alcoholics Anonymous, which is this, and I was miserable. In my mind, this is AA. And I don't know about you guys, man, but if my problem is if people and disconnection and relationships and that kind of stuff, you come here, my problem gets worse. I come here and hang out with you guys, my problem gets worse. I go home and I got anxiety. I get home and I can't stand with that mother effer shared again for the fourth time this week. And I'm going home and I'm 2 or 3 months sober. I'm going to 90,000 meetings in 90 days, like I heard suggested, and I'm insane. And I'm coming home, and I'm writing my suicide letters, and I'm going to, something bad's going to happen. So if there's anybody in here who feels that way, who's, you know, has a hard time with these meetings and these people and the smiles and the hugs, I will tell you this. This is the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not AA. This is not Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the fellowship. And it's a beautiful fellowship. And I owe my life to this fellowship. But this is not the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So what I'm here to do tonight, as you guys know, I mean, this seems like a very good group, is that I'm here to talk about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, a portion of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so let's do it. The only way I know how to talk about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is how I would talk to my sponsees. And so if I get to where you guys are feeling that I'm coaching you or pushing you along, it's because I am. It's because this is how I do it. I'm going to sit down at a Starbucks one-on-one with a guy, and we're going to go through the book. And that's how we're going to do it tonight. And I'm going to pretend like you guys are that guy. And that's the only way I know how to do that. So we're talking about fears, and I'm going to open this book that I hated so much when I got here. I remember somebody walking up with a book, and I told him, I don't need your stupid effing book, and I don't want your stupid effing steps, and I ain't getting a stupid effing sponsor. My psychiatrist told me I'm self-medicating, so none of that stuff's going to work anyways. It was my response. That's the attitude I walked in here with. So, 60, yeah. I'm not kidding. I can't quote this book back and forth. I'm not even going to try, so if I mess up, then so be it. Anyway, so we're, for the new guy, new people that are here, I would encourage you to ask other people about the steps that lead up to this one, afterwards or before. I'd love to spend some time with you. The program, the process of Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't start right here. There's a lot before. So if it seems a little deep right now, that's because there's some stuff that comes before. Anyway, so on page 67, it says, notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Ms. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread, a fabric of our existence which shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? So, what I was taught by a good friend of ours, he's come out here and he said, that a fourth step is a series of lists, observations, and prayers, right? And so we need to come up with a list, and we're on the fear inventory, right? And we're going to start with this list. But it's going to start giving me some directions and some observations and some stuff to look at. So it says, notice that the word fear is back alongside my difficulties. So they wrote their little resentment inventory, and they'll start seeing that a lot of these resentments that are popping up have something to do with fear, right? Fear of not getting what we want, fear of somebody finding out who I really am, fear of losing what I already have, a lot of fears that are popping up, and that's popping up in the resentment inventory, right? But they're starting to talk to us about stuff that has nothing to do with our resentment. They say, where is it? I'll find it. I think it's on the next page. Anyway, this short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. I remember going into a rehab or coming to AA, and I heard that there is such thing as a healthy fear, right? And I sit down with my sponsor, and he starts telling me that they're calling it an evil and corroding thread. They're saying it's that emotion trains of circumstances which brought us in. It doesn't sound like a healthy thing that's going on there, right? It sounds like there's a fear. It's causing some damage in my life. Also, I was taught that the fourth step is to find the stuff. If this is a spiritual program, we're trying to grow spiritually, there's some stuff that's blocking me off from growing spiritually, right? And I need to find out what it is, and here's one of them that's here. So it's saying it's touching every aspect of my life. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence, we shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. So here's how that looks like to me, right? I'm in a relationship, and I'm absolutely scared beyond to the core of a woman cheating on me. For some reason, I'm being cheated on. Something about it scares me, right? There's something about it that doesn't feel right. And so I'm in this relationship, and you don't know about my fears, right? But I'm starting to get a little controlling. I'm saying, well, why are you dressing like that? And I'm starting to check your emails, and I'm starting to check your text messages, and I'm saying, why are you hanging out with that friend? She's a bad influence, right? And why are you going out there and doing that kind of stuff? And why didn't you call me? And I'm starting to get like this, right? See, what you see, what the person sees, is that this guy's a dick. This guy, and excuse my lane, but this guy's controlling, right? But the truth is, I think that I'm afraid of being cheated on. I'm afraid of what that's going to do to me, so I think I could get my hands on it and control it, right? So what happens? Eventually, you know the story, I push her into another guy's arms, and at the end of that, I go, how could this happen to me? Why would she do that to me? I'm such a nice guy. How dare she, right? And that's what this looks like to me. When I'm sitting one-on-one with the new guy, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put this book into today's terms, and it's something that I can relate to. So it's saying, in motion trains of circumstances that brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. Poor me. Right? And that's my life. Every aspect of my life is shot through with this fear. It starts out with this fear. I'm afraid that if I go to that interview, right, they're not gonna give me the job. They're gonna reject me. They're gonna tell me that I'm not good enough, that I'm unqualified. So what do? I sit on the couch and I drink, right? Or I just become a dope dealer, and I'm so scared shitless to go out there and put myself out there. And what happens is that, later on in life, I come up with all these reasons why my life didn't work out, and poor me, and that's just kind of circumstances, right? So, sometimes we think bureaucracy can be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble, right? So they're not talking about a healthy fear. They're saying, and I get that. Maybe there is the emotion, fear, the initial remote, I'm standing too close to a cliff, right? And I get that little fear, and I go, oh, that's to protect me. Right? But living in fear, it's like I'm stuck in this little box. And so what happens is Tyler's life becomes this little box. And it's not going to change. It's going to stay right here. I'm going to date the same type of women. I'm going to get the same type of job. I'm going to go do the same type of stuff over and over and over again because my life is shot through with fear. Because I'm afraid to try something different. Because I'm afraid of rejection. Because I'm afraid of what she's going to think about me. Because I'm afraid of what she's going to do to me. Because I'm afraid, right? And so I live in this box, right? I stay here. I live in this neighborhood. I do the same thing. Hang out with the same people. I'm stuck, right? I won't, it affects, for me, it'll affect how I dress, how I talk, how I act. I want to be a nice guy, right? But I'm not going to act a nice guy because I'm afraid of being vulnerable. I'm afraid of what you're going to do with me being nice, right? And so there's all that stuff. And instead, it seems to cause more trouble. It ought to be classed with stealing. So here's the list. Here's our direction. We reviewed our fears thoroughly, right? So we put them on paper, even though we had no resentment connection with them. So they're not, again, it's not about my resentment and who I'm mad at and how that's, now it's talking about, let's look at all my fears. Let's look at all this stuff that's keeping me stuck in this little box, right? Let's look at it. And so it says, let's make a list. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment and connection with it. So I'm, okay. Put them on paper, I translate that to me, and need to make a list. I'm just going to make a list, right? What am I afraid of? I'm afraid of spiders. I'm afraid of airplanes. I'm afraid of staying sober. I'm afraid of getting loaded. I'm afraid of success. I'm afraid of failure. I'm afraid of sober sex. I'm afraid of a lot of stuff, right? And so I list it, okay? Number two in the direction, it says we ask ourselves why we have them. Why do I have these fears? Well, the airplanes. Because when I was a kid, I saw an airplane crash in Catalina. Scared the shit out of me, right? And I go through the list. Column two is I ask myself, why do I think I have that fear? Right? They're just kind of, they're tricking me because they already know why I have the fear, right? They're just trying to get me from point A to point B. They're trying to get me, there's a bridge, right? Here's where I am today, right? When it comes to fears and resentments and all that stuff, and here's where I need to be. Right? And so there's a bridge, this little process that they kind of take us through. And the process is, why do you have these fears, Tyler? Right? Now I keep going. You ask yourself why you have these fears. And now they answer the question. Right? They go, wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? And so I ask myself, I turn this whole book into a question. Has self-reliance failed me? Right? Now when I'm trying to get sober, nobody in my family wants to have anything to do with me. I'm suicidal. I'm in debt. I'm broken on the inside. I'm depressed. I've, been in and out of rehabs and institutions, in and out of jail, no friends left. I'm stuck right here in the gutter. It's really obvious to me that self-reliance has failed me. I've tried. Like I said, I go back to those questions. Choice A, choice B. Well, which one's going to feel better? Which one's going to push me further in life? Which one's going to help me come up? Which one's going to make me be that man that I want to be, right? And I make all those choices on my own, my self-reliance, and I end up here in the gutter, right? It's obvious. Has self-reliance failed me? Absolutely. And for everybody, you guys ask yourself that same question. Self-reliance was good as far as it went. So they're saying, don't worry, Tyler, you're not completely an F-up, right? Your self-reliance worked in a lot of areas in your life. It did some good stuff, right? But the overall outcome, right? The self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. So the overall picture, am I really content with the man I've become, right? Am I happy with where my life's at, right? And I start asking myself those questions. some of us once had great confidence, great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem. A lot of the times, my confidence, my self-confidence, and again, I turn this into questions. I go, well, did I ever have that self-confidence? And I go, absolutely, man. I was on varsity football, varsity soccer. I was on the homecoming court. I had friends. I was, a sparkling personality in the yearbook. I mean, I had, like, a good life, and I was very confident and very happy, and good shit going on, good stuff going on, right? And I had that confidence. But there's no question in my mind the reason why my counselor in high school said, Tyler, you know everyone, but no one knows you, right? And what I found is that confidence that I had, that I put out there, you guys would look at me and think I'm confident. But the truth is, I don't want you inside here where I live, right? And so I'll throw that confidence out there as kind of a defense mechanism to keep people away. And that's why I said we had great confidence. But it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. And I asked myself those questions, and I go, yep, that's true. Right? Because of my fears, fear of rejection, fear of failure, fear of all that stuff, man, I will throw myself out there so big and so confident that you won't even question me. I've even done it in Alcoholics Anonymous. This time, man, I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I studied, and I read the book, and I memorized stuff, and I'm doing all the stuff, and I'm the guy that you see everywhere, right, doing everything. And guess what? You're not going to come up to me and ask me how I'm doing. You know how. You're not going to say, are you really okay, Tyler? Right? Because I got this wall up. I'm so afraid of you guys knowing who I am deep down inside that I got this wall up that everything's going good. Does that make sense? So it says, we keep moving on. It says, perhaps there is a better way. We think so. Right, so they're asking me. You have the okay one?
No, not that's okay. Good. Yeah, well, I'm not in
good mood tonight. Okay, so we have a list, right? And now it's time for the observations. There's some stuff, again, from point A. I gotta get from point A where I am with my fears to point B where they need me to be, right, for this process. And so now it's the observation. Perhaps there's a better way. We think so. Right? They're kind of, I think these guys are kind of sarcastic. Right? When they're writing this, they're all, we think so. Hopefully you do too, right? Because what I got's not going on. What I got's not working. My outlook on fears, the way I treat my fears and the way I change my life around my fears is not working. It's not going okay, right? I'm scared shitless, but yet I have nothing that I can do to get around that. Here we go. Here's how we deal with our fears. See if this sounds a little better to you. This kind of attitude I get from these guys. For we're now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. And I go, wait a minute. And how come all of a sudden now I'm on this basis of trusting and relying on God? Where did that come from? Well, third step, right? Right before I got here, I made a commitment. I signed a little deal with God. I'm saying, listen, dude, I've messed up, right? I've done some good stuff, some bad stuff, but I'm not really happy with the outcome. Here you go. You take it, right? And then from here on, I'll trust and I'll rely on you, and I'll do whatever you put in my path, and I'll help your kids, and I'll try to grow spiritually, right? That's the third step agreement. That's my choice, my decision, right? It says, what's your decision to be? There's my decision. So now they're reminding me of that decision. They're saying, dude, you made a choice to step out of management. So now you're on your fourth step. We're talking about fears. You're in the business. Now it's time to trust and rely upon God. Remember, right? And they're kind of like, Tyler, you remember? Right? And they'll do that throughout the whole book. They're going to remind you of that third step decision, right? So we're now on a different basis of trusting, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. And I go, okay. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. So who's we, guys? Right? Are they telling me what to do? I take this more as we are the first 100 who ever recovered, right? And they're saying, well, here's what we did, and it worked for us. You have a choice, how you take it or leave it, but this is what's working for us, right? And so we trust infinite God rather than our finite self. So me, Tyler, I'm not going to try that if I want the results that they're getting, right? That's always what I come back to is, do I want the results these guys did? the results that they got. Well, a lot of them stayed sober, a lot of them recovered, got their lives back, became, and, you know, good citizens. Do I want those results, or do I want what I've got? Well, okay, I'll do what they did, right? So we trust infinite God rather than our finite self. We're in the world to play the role He assigns. And it's just another reminder of the third step, right? It's saying, remember, right? You tried to create your own role. You tried to play God. You did what you thought was best for your life. You ended up in detox for the 13th time, right? Time to try something different, right? They're kind of reminding me of that. We're in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us, and humbly rely on Him, thus He enables us to match calamity with serenity, right? And that calamity is that chaos, that those, I look at it as that's the stuff that I get afraid about. That's the, when the fear starts coming up, right? To the extent that I'm trusting and relying upon whatever's out there, right? Is the extent that I'll be able to walk through that stuff and feel okay about it, right? I'll be able to match calamity with serenity. Right, and they're saying here's how, if you can't match calamity, right, you're not trusting and relying upon God, is kind of how I go back to that. There's an equation. To the extent that I trust and rely, right, on whatever's out there, you guys call it whatever you want, is the extent that I'll be able to walk through life and match that calamity, the chaos and all that stuff that's going on with serenity. And here's my experience with that, is that I did AA for a while, and I could sponsor, a lot of guys, and I'd spend Saturdays at Starbucks, and I'd have a guy come meet me there at 7, and another guy at 8:30, another guy, bam, 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 all day long. I'd meet Starbucks at like 5, and I'm just like, I was trying to do AA for a long time, and it worked really, really, really well. And then you get in the relationship and you fall in love and you're going to get married and you're going to do all that great stuff, man. And now it's time to go on to the next phase, which is, building a family and doing all that stuff. And, I was engaged, and long story short, my fiance, 2 weeks after she had my daughter, she started drinking again. And what happens is, all those that self-centered fear that I'm inadequate. How am I going to do this? I don't want to raise a kid on my own. I can't raise a kid on my own. I'm not going to be enough. Like my whole life, I was afraid to have kids because I knew what's going to happen. I know. I mean, I got anger issues. Sooner or later, the kid's going to fly across the room. That stuff's going to happen, right? And that's really the kind of father that I thought I was going to be. And there was a lot of that fear. And so what has happened is that I was told to go back to the steps. Well, first I was told to go to Al-Anon and work the steps with them. But I was also told to go back to the steps. And we really focused on this portion. Is that, God, are you trusting and relying upon whatever is out there that you're believing in? And the day, I'll tell you this, the days that I was able to show up and be a dad, and hold that kid and take care of that kid and be the rock for her to cry, the shoulder to cry on. And when I wasn't, I'm on the phone yelling at her about how it's all her fault. That makes sense? So, when I'm trusting and relying, right, I'm okay with the situation. I'm okay with the cards that are being dealt. And I'm able to match those cards, and I'm able to show up with a smile and be the man that I'm supposed to be, right? And when I'm not doing this, it's everybody's fault. And how dare you F up my life, right? And that's how I take that one right there, okay? That's my experience with it. And I'll touch more on that a little bit later. How are we doing on time? Got 45 minutes left.
Oh, wow.
we're in the world to play the role you assigned to see. Okay, so there you go. That's enabling us to match time or sanity. So there's the observations. Now I move forward. This is kind of some directions on how to get through my fears. I want to know how to deal with these, right? We made a bunch of lists, and I was told that if you just make a bunch of lists, all that really happens, you waste paper, time, and ink, right? So what do we do next? Since we never apologize to anyone for the pain upon our Creator. Okay, I can do that. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Notice how they say that twice? Right? Don't question it. You know what I'm saying? They're saying don't question it. Pick one, right? You pick one. You choose to trust and rely, or you choose not to. But don't pick one and then go back and forth on the fence. Okay, good. good. Thank you. So we never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. So here's now where they're telling me. This is where I see some action, right? We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. So here's my directions, right? After I've done the list, I've kind of meditated on the observations. It's saying we ask Him to remove our fear. I don't know about you guys, but when it says we ask, I take that as a prayer, right? It's a prayer. And I get on my knees, or anytime right now, when I'm on my fear list, I'm going through my fears. And I'm saying, God, please remove the fear of spiders. Please remove the fear of airplanes. Please remove the fear of staying sober. Please remove the fear. And I pray through my fear list, right? Every single one of them. And then it says, we ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. It's interesting, and I see a lot of confusion right here. So if I'm afraid of, I'm in a relationship, and I'm afraid that she's going to cheat on me, right? I have that fear. It comes up to this day. What do I do? Well, it says, ask Him to direct my attention to what He would have me be. So what would He have me be in that situation? Maybe trusting, maybe a loving companion, maybe faithful, maybe, what would God have me be in this situation? Would He have me be a worrywart and freaking out and afraid she's going to cheat on me, so I'm running around controlling her and checking emails? Or would He have me be trusting and relying and faithful and courageous? What would He have me be? Right? And so those are my prayers, man. And to this day, I walk into situations. I've had a lot of them this year, and I say, God, remove this fear and direct my attention to what He would have me be. And then I stop and ask myself, what would He have me be? See, the God that I choose to rely on and believe in would have me be faithful and courageous and trusting and an example. There's some stuff there, man. And then my job is to go out and try to be that. Make sense? Notice this. What I see, I was told this. This is a mirror. This is a mirror. Every instruction in here is directing my focus back on me. Right? Back on me. So I'm scared about what you're going to do. And it says, well, what am I supposed to do? Right? So the tension goes back on me. And once again, I'm looking in the mirror. And it says, Tyler, what would you be? What is your job in the situation? Right? Michael asked me to come out here and speak, right? And of course, like I said, my mouth goes, okay, absolutely, what else can I help you with? Right? Deep down in my gut, where I live, it goes, you stupid mother effer. You are not, what are you doing? You're not this guru kind of book study guy. You're just a drunk. You just help drunk. That's it. You don't know, you have no clue what you're doing, right? And so I say, God, please remove this fear. Direct my attention to what You would have me be. And what I came up with is He would have me be faithful. And that I'm in this space for a reason. That I'm supposed to be here for a reason. Right? And I show up and hope that that's the truth. Right? I'll be honest with you guys, and especially to the new guys, is that when my sponsor's breaking this down real early on, it seems wishy-washy. It seems a little kind of like out there in the stars kind of crap, right? And I'm going, come on, right? But what I had to look at is the stuff that made sense to me, the stuff that wasn't wishy-washy to me, the stuff that went with my instincts, ended me up in the effing gutter, right? And I didn't want to be in the gutter no more. So this wishy-washy kind of corny stuff, I was open-minded to at least trying it, right? So it says, now if I do that, right, I ask God to remove my fear and direct my attention to what He would have me be, here's the result. At once we commence doubt, real fear. Does that say that the fear is gone right now? No. But it says I've started the process to outgrow that fear. Right? I've got up off my ass and I've done something about it. I'm choosing not to live in that effing box today. Right? That box, my whole life is that box, and I will stay stuck. I'll never own a house. I'll never own a company. I'll have bad credit my whole life. I'll live check to check. I'll end up dating the same type of women. I will be, right? I'll be right here in this box. And so with these tools, right, the list and the observations and the prayers, now I've been trying to transform into this guy who's commencing to outgrow fear. It's not gone. It's not gone. The fear's not, I'm still scared shitless to be up here tonight. But I've commenced to outgrow that fear. I've taken the steps and the action to kind of walk right through it. So when I look at it from this standpoint, I go, okay, well, is there really a healthy fear? No, I don't think so. I think that fear is one of the reasons why I ended up here. It's one of the reasons why I ended up in a position in my life to where I needed Alcoholics Anonymous. Fear was, it was something, I wouldn't tell you I'm afraid, right? But it was something that I could blame my alcoholism on to myself. Does that make sense? I could do this because I'll never amount to anything anyways, and I don't deserve a good girl, and, you know, I'm just going to flunk out of college if I try to go, and, you know, F it. I'm just going to stay lit, right? And so I put the bottle to the back of my throat, and I stayed there, right? And today, through this book, it not only clears me out, but it gives me tools on how to keep that shit from coming back, right? And, I don't know, for me, I need that. So, how are we doing on time? We good? Okay. Well, that's really all I got about the kind of the directions for fear. Kind of where I stand on it is this, and this is what I would tell all my guys. You have a choice, right? And your choice is A or B. You get a choice, right? There's no middle of the road. There's no. You're either gonna do this stuff or not gonna do this stuff. And you either want the results that the guys who wrote this book got, or you don't, right? Now, I cannot come here and say that I've worked the program of Alcoholics Anonymous if I choose not to do the prayers and I choose not to do some of the stuff, or I choose to change it. I cannot, for me, I can't say I've done Alcoholics Anonymous because they've explained it right here. It's very clean. I mean, cut black and white. So for me, when I got sober this time, the guy who approached me, he said, Tyler, how do you know the steps won't work for you? I said, because I'm self-medicating, go talk to my psychiatrist, blah, 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 right? So we did, right? He challenged me. He said, Tyler, I challenge you to work in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Challenge me. Prove them wrong. Prove me wrong. And he got in my face and he said, let's go talk to your psychiatrist. So we did. Went to my psychiatrist and we came up, the three of us, came up with a plan on how I was going to wean off the medication for the first time in 12 years and attempt the steps. And what happened is I haven't been on another medication since. I worked all 12 steps in a row with the sponsor, knowing that that shit would not work for me, right? And telling him every single step of the way, you want me to, are you serious? That is not going to cut it for me, right? But I'm going to do it anyways. And I became that guy who knew this was not going to work, but I'm going to do it anyways. And they say the prayer. I'm going to do it anyway. It's not going to work. The list, I'm not, right? And all the way through the process, man. And to this day, I can't prove it wrong. That's why I'm here today, right? This is one more attempt for me to prove it wrong, right? That's the type of brain that I live with. When you're not, you say you're an alcoholic, you're admitting to the fact that you have a brain that will try to prove this stuff wrong. That it will tell you on the best day ever or the worst day ever, tell you why that stuff's not for you. And that's the brand I'm stuck with. I think fear was a big part of that, and I think this is just kind of that next phase of trying to grow up and become that guy who I always wanted to be. That's all I got. So thank you guys for being here. Thank you.
And I'll open to the questions from the basket.
So how do we do this? I read one of the questions.
Just from the team.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So since your first fear inventory, has a lot of your fears gone away? And after fifth step, yes. I think that after the fifth step, it talks about we're able to look the world in the eyes, right? Where I was always kind of looking down. I was very prideful, but I felt dirty on the inside, right? And through listing this stuff and through going through the inventory and saying the prayers, for some reason, I don't know why, I felt clean. I felt clean. Now, did those same fears come back? Absolutely. Right? And I think that's what we deal with. I think that I can do the work and I can clean it out, and it does a really good job. It cleans me out, right? But then more stuff comes. And I think that's why they give us the kind of follow through with the work. They give me something I could do every time a fear pops back up, right? So my first fears were this, fear of intimacy, fear of staying sober, getting loaded, success, failure, people, airplanes, spiders, sober sex, all that kind of stuff, right? To this day, my fears are aimless, right? Make sense? But like I said before, is that I've become a guy that's commencing to outgrow those fears. And I haven't been sober that long, so I think that it's a long process, but I do the work to walk through those. Somebody told me this. They said, Tyler, do you know how to walk through fear? And I'm waiting for something to go deep and profound. And I said, no, how? He goes, scared shitless. All right. I hope I answered the question. If I didn't, see me afterwards, and I'll try to give it another shot. All right. How did you overcome the handicap of youth as you continue to pursue sobriety? I think that's a good question. I think that this book that I try to live by, I think it gives me the perfect tools on how to do that. It doesn't talk directly to races or ages or anything like that. I think that if I get caught up in the fellowship of AA, all this, it's easy to get sidetracked, right? And it's easy to feel too young, and it's easy to feel too old, or feel it. But like I said, that's my problem. My problem is that I'm disconnected from you people whatsoever. I will always find a reason why this stuff won't work for me, right? But again, the book, I found myself in the book. I found myself in the steps. I found... In being young, I found you guys were young. I found that I could relate to people that you can't touch, right? I found guys that my sponsor said how you will become uniquely useful, right? And there's some guys or people out there who are gonna die unless you stay sober and find those little suckers, right? And so I did. The 12-step work, one-on-one, meet with another drunk to save the day every time, right? To me, that's AA. To me, I could stand up here, but this is not AA. Me and one of my guys sitting down talking about recovery and working through stuff, to me, that's AA. And when I'm doing that, age has no Clinton. Age does not affect me. Your race doesn't affect me. What neighborhood you come from, how you're raised, none of that stuff affects me. It's me and you, one-on-one, a drunk, a couple of drunks. So that's how I get through it. And whoever wrote this, I would encourage you to get into 12-step work and especially finding those youngsters that are really out there that are dying. All right? Thank you. How would you direct someone that is living in fear continuously to come out of it? What if that person is not your sponsee? Are you asking me to sponsor you? here's how I would direct somebody. Put it this way. When I'm locked up in a house for 8 months period of time, I told you where I kind of come from, but I got a bottle in one hand and I got a pipe in the other one. I'm not coming up with ideas on how to change my life. It's just not coming, right? So what happens is somehow through a series of events, I end up here where they already have a process on how to change their life. I would challenge that person to follow through with the process, right? It works every single mother effing time, even when I don't want it to work. Even when I'm looking for the escape route, I do it and it works. So with the fear, I think we're all living in fear. I think that's something that's a very human, it's not just an alcoholic thing. That's a human characteristic. We have fear, right? Alcoholics are lucky because we're given tools on how to face that and how to walk through it. My mom doesn't have this stuff. You know what I'm saying? But I do. And so what do? I mean, if you're living in fear, good. Go back and read what we just read. Read it, make the list, probably talk to a sponsor as you walk through it. Say a lot of the prayers when the fear's caught. I mean, he gives us very specific tools on how to deal with fears. I hope I answered that. And if not, see me afterwards. My husband reminds me of how you were. Is there something other than changing myself that I can do or say that can help bring him to AA? Or must he find it on his own for it to work? It sounds like you already got the answer. You've talked to way too many people already. I would say that's it. My job when it's a husband or a wife or a girlfriend or a brother or sister is to be the best example of Alcoholics Anonymous that I should be. Right? And then if they see me, little gray areas in me, they're going to use that to discount Alcoholics Anonymous and a reason why they don't need to come here. You get what I'm saying? So if you really truly care about that person, absolutely. Focus on yourself. Become the best you that you could possibly be. Rely on the process. Do the work. Do the 12-step work. Get Sponsy. Do that stuff. I guarantee you this. You coming home and him seeing that smile on your face, that kind of working one-on-one with the drone brings you, he's going to want a piece of that. I guarantee you he's going to want some of that. It just happens like that. I have family in the same situation. I mean, I could go on and on and on. But I'll tell you this. I use my sister right now. And nothing about how she drinks or uses, nothing about any of that stuff. But I definitely partied and got into a lot of chemicals with her. I mean, we had a lot of fun. She lives in Northern California. Where she lives, that's what you do, right? Whether she's an alcoholic or an addict, I don't know. But I can tell you this. We take the drugs and alcohol out of her life, and something inside ain't right. She's not happy with the way she's living, right? And she's been able to watch her brother, who, last time I visited her before I got sober, I was thrown in the Humboldt County Jail. I beat out all the windows in her house. I scared the crap out of her, and I was thrown in jail, and she was heartbroken, and right? So she's watched that brother become a new man, become stable, become free of all that dirty stuff on the inside, watch me become a dad, watch me become an employee and then an employer. She's watching this. Well, guess what? She's calling me saying, is there a way for like non-alcoholic addicts to work the steps? I want to learn how to do what you do. I want those results. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's our job with people in our lives. If you look at the steps, what it says is, especially in the ninth step, it says our real job is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and the people about us. Not just my husband, not just my employer, not just my best friends who are alive, but the people about us. Make sense? I hope so. And again, if I didn't answer it, I'd love to talk about it afterwards. If one of your guys isn't having regular meeting attendance and doesn't have any commitments and rarely calls you, would you sweat him about working on inventory? Here's my take on that, is that when you ask for my help, what are you asking for? Is it really Tyler's help, or is it what I've done to get to where I'm at? Make sense? Tyler's help will get you in you up in detox, right? And Tyler's help will not be very successful for you. So when you ask for my help, I make it very clear that you're asking for what I've done to recover, what I've done to get me from point A to point B. You're asking for the bridge, right? And so if you come to me, I'm going to tell you what it takes to be in the boat. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're going down the stream together. Here's what it takes to be in the boat. I need this many meetings a week. I need these phone calls. I need service work. I need this, right? So I'm going to give you that stuff. If you choose not to take my help, then I'm going to remind you every time I see you that you're choosing not to take my help. Does that make sense? I'm going to tell you that you're not in the boat. Right? Am I going to move on in the steps? Absolutely not. I'm going to tell you you're not in the boat. Right? And if you choose to be in the boat, if you get to that night where you're ready to either blow your brains out or do something different, call me and I'll show up and we can get in the boat and I make it real easy for them that, hey, we're going to sit down, we're going to do a prayer together, we're going to do some writing, we could do it together, you could do it behind closed doors, I don't really give a nap. Then we're going to talk about your writing, we're going to share our stories, and then we're going to make a list and we're going to go out and we're going to try to make things right, and then after that we're going to try to pray, maybe take more inventory and go help people. You cool with that? Right? And I throw it out there very simply like that. Notice this, that right before the inventory, it reminds us that we were willing to go to any length for victory over alcoholism, right? And if they're not doing that stuff, I'm going to remind them that, right? I'm going to remind them that. Scott Lee always says, I want him, if he's in prison one day, I want him to realize that Alcoholics Anonymous didn't fail. He chose not to get in the boat. He chose not to do what was suggested, right? I hope that makes sense. I think I owe it to them. I owe that to them. I don't know if there's enough of that going along, because like I said, I came to AA for a long time and I thought this was AA. I'm doing it. 90 means and 90 days, so that's what I heard. I'm reading the book, right? That's AA. I got a commitment, that's AA. I thought all that was AA. Right? It's not. AA is one alcoholic with another. Right? In the book it says that's when recovery begins. Right? So my job is to do the steps to get prepared so that I can work one-on-one with the drunk. If I want to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I don't, then they said there's no monopoly on recovery. There's maybe a billion other ways to recover. But I only know the, I only talk about the one way that worked for me. Nothing else is working. This is it. This is what worked. I think I just went off on a tangent. I could do that from time to time. I don't know if we're... All right. What did you do to get rid of the fear? That guy sticking the gun in your face, did you make financial amends or any amends? Absolutely. My sponsor kind of, he was really by the book. I said, well, you know, it's one of those old playmates, right? You're not supposed to go around and you're not, can't make amends to those kind of guys, because I didn't want to pay him the $4,000 that I owed him. And my sponsor said, Tyler, where does it say that in the book? Where does it say that? You want to get rid of this or not? And so I had to make a payment plan with the dope dealer. And I stuck to that payment plan. I did exactly what it said in the book, man. I showed up, and I didn't really have to show up because he was kind of showing up. And I said, listen, man, I'm sorry. I'm going to hope to die drunk, man, and I'm sorry that I effed up. And I thank you because if it wasn't for you giving me that line of credit, I wouldn't have been able to survive, and I would have been on the streets, and I thank you for that. And here's a $500 down payment, and I will do anything I possibly can. And if you need me, here I am. This is my address, here I am. The dude stopped showing up once a day and started showing up once a week. 2 months later, he was paid in full. I got an anonymous envelope in the mail for $1,000. I was working at Ready Labor. I was doing carpenter's assistant. I was doing anything. And he was getting the money before my landlord was. Long story short, 3 years later, he called and asked for my help. He said that he was a hope to die drunk and that he wanted to try to do what I do. Right? I don't know when I make those amends what the point of it is, right? And I think it's about me clearing up me so that I can get this bitch and have the famous life, right? Well, in the book, it doesn't say that. It says our real job is to fit ourselves to be an act of service to God and the people about me. So by me mending that situation, now I'm able to be of help when he comes around. If I didn't make those amends, he wouldn't have been calling for my help. That makes sense? I hope I answered. I like tangents. I'm gonna beat around the bush as long as I can, guys. But I hope that makes sense. Have you developed any new fears since you've been sober? Are there any you haven't been able to shake? Honestly, absolutely. And I don't know if it's about shaking them. Like I said, how do you walk through fear? Scared shitless, right? And a lot of them I think are supposed to be there. There's this guy, Mead, that I really respect what he has to say, and he says, I've learned to live with unresolved problems. See, when I have some unresolved issues going on, I can't maintain. There's a part in the book, in the doctor's opinion, where it says that same man who has so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for drinking or alcohol. Let's say he solved the problems. You know what I'm saying? It's not about the problems being solved. It's not about shaking the fear. It's about, I'm not a chicken shit today. I'll stand up and I'll face them. I'll stand up and I'll fight. I'll stand up and I'll walk. That's the man that I've been changed into. It's like a chicken shit who's going to lock himself up in a house and drink himself to death. To a man who's willing to stand up and fight. Whether I win or not, I'm willing to stand up for my life today. And I think that's kind of the message I'm giving. It's the whole book is all about that. Make sense? I want the easy answer. I want to do this and you will never have fears again. Right? I want that. But I don't know if you think about it, we've had that quick fix our whole life. Right? And it didn't cut it for us. And so now we're on a new basis, right? Trusting and relying upon God. Maybe there's a reason for that fear. Maybe that fear is going to drive me to be where I'm supposed to be. I don't know. Right? Now, do I always it sounded spiritual when I'm going through this fear as hell. I mean, it gets really real. I mean, I don't know how to be a dad. How am I supposed to, I've never taken a class. How am I supposed to know how to raise a 1 year? I mean, even when she came out 2 weeks old and I'm there, round the clock, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling like, how am I supposed to know how to do that? I'm scared shitless, right? And so I'm saying the prayers, and I'm doing the writing, and I'm calling the people, and I'm having fun. When she's taking a nap, my sponsors are coming over and trying to get through the chapter, and then she wakes up, and I got to run over there to feed her, and we're like going through the book, and I got a bottle in her mouth, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know how to do that, right? But I'll tell you what I do know how to do. It says do this. Okay, I can do that. Does that make sense? I show up, and I do that. Tyler is not, it's not like I'm a different guy. I'm just the guy who does the work. I'm the same mother effer, right? The same kind of dirtbag. I just do the work today. But there's still there's a lot of stuff there. I think it'll be there. That makes sense. How would you guide a recovering person who is afflicted with fear-based issues such as social phobia and an avoidant personality? Is it simply a matter of practice or forcing oneself to fellowship? That's my kind of person right there. Whoever wrote that, I get you. I absolutely get you. And that's kind of what I was talking about, man. I show up in AA sober, stone cold sober, right? I'm out the door. I'm splitting, right? See, me, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that some people don't have, like, social phobia. Yours might be a lot worse than mine. So I don't want to make it seem like I'm, you know, hey, I get you, I understand it. Some people have social phobia that are way worse than I could ever, right? But I do think that we have a solution. I do think that there's a solution in the book, and not just the steps. Our book asked us to rely on outside help for some outside issues. I've gone to therapy several times in sobriety. Put it this way, I went to therapy and counseling and medication, all that stuff before the steps, right? Nothing ever cut it. Nothing cut it, right? Now I'm sober, work the steps, right? Now that I'm honest with myself, I know the truth about who I am, I could go into a psychologist today, a therapist, and I could work on some real deep shit. Right, and we can get to the bottom of it, and I can get real with them, and I walk away a different person, right? But I'll be completely honest with you, without those 12 steps, there's no hope for me in any kind of psychology or counseling. I have to be doing that stuff, right? When I'm in a counselor, a psychologist, I'm focused on me. And what I've been taught is that for an alcoholic, that's death. That makes the problem worse. Right? That makes me worse. So if I could do AA, and for the person who wrote this, if you could do AA and throw yourself into the one-on-one, working with drunks, the service work, that kind of stuff, I would also recommend, I think you got a good chance of seeking outside help and that being successful as well. Does that make sense? I hope so. And also getting real with maybe a group of people, you know, who can kind of help you walk through that, you know, kind of drag you out. I remember early on, people would call me, and I lived a block away. I didn't have a license, but I was a block walking distance. And these dudes would call me, and they'd go, hey, Tyler, what's up, man? What are you doing? And I'm like, well, you know, I've had a hard day. You know, I went to, like, 6.5 meetings this week, and, you know, I'm just chilling. I'm going to chill out and, like, you know, take care of me tonight and relax. The symptoms are on. I just made a hungry man, you know, like a microwave dinner. I'm chilling. And they go, oh, well, we're in your driveway. So that's kind of, and I thank God for those people. They were in my driveway. And I would go out and they'd come on, let's do it. We're going to do this. And there's a bunch of happy guys that are bouncing around circles. Yeah, we're going to go recover. All right. So I had a group of people who were fighting. They were in my corner even when I wasn't. And I would encourage everybody to have that. Do we always use a sponsor or does self-reliance or a higher power finally direct our every action? Well, I can get real honest with you guys. Bill Cleveland's my sponsor. However, he doesn't really know that. You get what I'm saying? Like, I show up for the spiritual work. We get busy, and then he won't hear from me for a couple months. Is that right or wrong for everybody? That's just me getting real about me. But I'll tell you this. I always have, you know, 20 or 30 spots. I'm always doing the work. I'm always one-on-one with the drums. I don't find the need to, like, go sit and have a sponsor, like, analyze my whole life and tell me where I need to go. The answers come. And again, there's no... Yes, I believe you should probably have a sponsor and be... I think you should have those people. But there's a part in it, in Bill's story where he says, my friend also assured me that when these things were done, I would enter upon the new relationship with my Creator, and I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. Sounded like Eddie's telling Bill, hey, listen, dude, I'm going to take you to the work, you do this shit, clean out your life, start helping other drunks, and you'll have the answers, the elements of a way of living that will answer your problem. I think you'll have what you need, Bill. We get you through the work and get you hooked up spiritually, you will have what you need. And I think that was what old school AA was about. There wasn't as much reliance on people back then. A lot of the times these days I think, and that's just from my research, from people telling me, these days we want to rely on people more and more and more, it seems like. I hope that answers the question. We ask God to remove and help you outgrow fear, that I actually work for you. Yes. Here's why. Does it happen when I want it to? Absolutely not. But when I ask for that help, I say those prayers and ask for that help, and then I turn my focus on to somebody I can help, somehow, someday, the fear is removed. The fear is, it's not scary anymore. One of my sponsees, he always says that AA is like, you know, you have this pool over here that needs to be filled, right? And you come to AA and they're going, well, go water the front lawn, right? And you're like, how does that make sense? I gotta fill the pool, right? And so one day finally you just say, okay, and you run out there and you water the front lawn and you turn around the next day and your pool's filled, right? And I think that's what AA, that's what the process is. It's that somehow I say the prayers and I do that writing in the prayers and stuff, and then I go focus on somebody I can help, and next thing you know, the fears are being taken care of themselves. I don't have to focus on it anymore. From my experience. And I think that's all the questions. So anyways, I thank you guys for...